welcome to the Happy Rant podcast. My name is Ted Kluck, and I'm joined here in studio by my good friends Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And gentlemen, we just wrapped up the Easter holiday, which was strange in that, well, it's always kind of strange to see the way that this holiday is marketed, but one of my enduring memories of it was I'm standing in a Walgreens the night before Easter with some family members, and we're just kind of tossing collections of like pastel crap into our baskets, because there's the expectation that you give your kids some stuff on Easter, which is dude, it's just strange. It's like you know, nothing honors the risen Christ more than like a gigantic chocolate, you know, Star Wars guy or whatever. Yeah, the whole thing is just a little bit crazy, but I'm going to dive right into our first topic here. And Big R, this is one that that you had suggested, and apparently there are churches that are now so big and the money is raining so heavily that they can afford to hire helicopters to fly over their gigantic compound and drop Easter eggs. So that the kids from these particular churches will be able to toddle around and collect plastic eggs that have dropped out of a helicopter. And this is supposed to be the thing that will ignite the hearts of people and draw them to the church. So, guys, Barnabas, you're the son of a pastor. Big R, you are a pastor. I am just a cynical guy. So I'm gonna let you guys speak into this one, and then I'll tell you a little story about church on Easter Sunday. But Big R, what do you think of this whole phenom?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of come up the last few years, because I don't know how, but every time during my you know, my Easter sermon, I somehow am able to drop a bunch of Easter egg hunt and helicopter drop jokes into my sermon, because we don't do that at my church. Right. And I end up sounding...
So you feel superior?
I feel a little superior, absolutely. And I come off a little snarky and sarcastic about it. But you know, what kind of brought it up was I had a friend a few years ago that was planting a new church. He was getting ready to launch the church, and he did this massive like helicopter drop right before they launched on Easter Sunday. And so what they did is they met in sort of like the local high school football stadium. They had this helicopter come over. They had all these people gathered, and I think it was something like 3,000 people. It was like over the top crazy amount of people that came out to this thing. Mm-hmm. And so the helicopter drops, like, I mean, they're dropping eggs. They're dropping like Xboxes. They're dropping like money.
It can't be good for the Xbox.
Yeah, you would think it would. Yeah, you would think that there'd be a little damage control that needs to be done with that. So all this stuff gets dropped. There's like police cars there. There's all these people in the bleachers of the stadium. So it drops. Everybody rushes to the floor of the stadium. You know, it's just mayhem. The kids are grabbing stuff. It's greed. It's avarice. It's everything you'd imagine. Mm-hmm. You know, parents in on all the goods and everything. And the whole place, he said, cleared out in about 5 minutes. And before he had time to think.
So it was a super meaningful experience.
Super meaningful experience. Yeah. Like nothing's planned, right? Homeboy like goes to one of the cop cars, grabs one of the, you know, the like the CB radios and says, and by the way, you know, if you just look right there, you know, we're having church there tomorrow at like 10 a.m., you know, at our building in the high school. He said literally the next day, like they had not one extra person.
Wow.
For Easter service, you know, than they normally had as part of their regular, you know, core team that was going to be meeting on that first Sunday.
Maybe not even the helicopter pilot.
Not even the helicopter pilot.
You know, he had everybody his own stuff just going on.
They had their own stuff going on. So everybody just sort of grabbed all the loot and they 86'd it out of there. And that was it. And so what was funny is that after that, I was like, why would anybody do that? But then I started driving around and seeing signs, you know, out here in the Midwest, people still have church signs. And it was all of this like Easter egg drop, you know, helicopter drop, you know, Saturday night before Easter, you know. And so it's kind of become this thing that I think people are engaging in as far as like it being a marketing tool. And I just think it's so – it's just baffling to me. It's just the weirdest thing.
Now, Barnabas, has John Piper ever done a helicopter drop?
He has parachuted out of a helicopter to advertise Easter, because nothing says he is risen indeed like a middle-aged man flying out of
like
a helicopter.
Like an old man flying out of a helicopter.
That's right. That's true. He's not middle-aged anymore. He's elderly. No, we didn't do that. Nobody's ever accused churches of being good at marketing. So I'm not surprised that that while there is absolutely no evidence that this does anything to increase attendance, that churches still try it because that's just how churches are. I do think it's really interesting, though, that if how many of these churches have like a come visit Santa Claus before Christmas? Because isn't that right. basically the same thing? It's basically just a kind of a cutesy tradition to get people in the door, except that we think of Santa Claus as like anti-Christian Christmas. But apparently things involving greed and having some tangential relationship to the Easter Bunny are they're perfectly cool for Easter. And that doesn't make a whole heap of sense to me.
Yeah, I know. It's. And I think we talked about this around Christmas time. It's like no – everybody's always so concerned about taking the Christ out of Christmas, but nobody's concerned about like, you know, keeping the East in Easter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Nope, we just keep the bunnies in Easter and the chocolate and the pastels. And like it's – yeah, I don't understand it. I mean and the thing is I see a lot of churches that I actually – I mean, so I don't know of any churches that do the helicopter drop. This was news to me when you described this. Maybe it's a distinctly Midwestern thing that I have just missed. But
we love our helicopters in the Midwest.
But the Easter egg hunt is ubiquitous, and churches, a ton of churches with people who you know, church leaders who I really respect, do those. And I, for the life of me, can't figure out why, unless they're just saying it's a fun thing for the kids. You know,
I think that's what they're saying. I mean, it's like we don't want to overplay these things, yeah. Right? Like what's the big deal if you have like Easter egg hunts after Easter service? Kids get to go around and get candy. I mean, it's pretty harmless.
A lot of it do it like the Saturday before Easter. So it's like a Saturday morning thing, and it's almost like an Easter festival kind of thing. And I think that's great. Like that's just a ton of fun. My kids love it. What parent doesn't want to sugar their kids up the day before trying to get them to the holiest Sunday of the year or something like that?
How do you handle the Easter egg hunt at like the hipster church plant? I mean, do you hide little like quinoa salads and microbrews and
no, it's the
tiny flannel shirts.
There is such a thing as Kraft chocolate, and it's $14 a bar.
$14 for a bar upscale chocolate, absolutely.
And it tastes like wet soot. It's disgusting.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what we provided all the kids this year. We gave beard oil to the men, and we gave anthropology gift certificates to all the women. I mean, that's how we rolled at Substance this year, obviously. You know,
baby, I love it, man. I love it. And that's how you should roll.
Speaking of ministry.
Right. It did, and it cost us, I think, $12,913. I mean, it was worth every dime.
And your church has what, like 120, 200 people? I mean, it's
right.
You imagine a large church doing that. You'd be talking about, you're talking national debt levels of money to do that.
Yeah, we'd be talking like a quarter of their annual budget. Exactly. So.
Well, speaking of Easter service, I know I texted you this, but I actually went to a Brentwood, Tennessee area mega church for Easter service. We were visiting some family in the area. And if you don't know Brentwood is sort of the highest of the high-end suburbs in the Nashville area. And I have to tell you guys, it had been a long time, having grown up in the Midwest, having lived in Michigan. Now, you know, we're here in Jackson, which is kind of, you know, the humbler part of Tennessee, I guess, West Tennessee. It had been a long time since I'd been in that setting. And I have to tell you—
And by that setting, you mean really affluent megachurch.
Really, really affluent megachurch. So it had been forever since I've been in a place like that. But I have to say, like, I've never in one place seen more kind of well-preserved people over 30. You know what I mean? they just had that gleaming, radiant, you know, like JCPenney's catalog handsomeness to them.
Life is beautiful in Brentwood.
they are living glamour.
Maybe life would be sunny with plenty of money. And you.
No, I mean, but you're talking about Brentwood. I mean, seriously, I've spent a lot of time in Brentwood over the years. And like, what else could you expect?
So the pastor goes, he said something like, you know, you're all beautiful people in God's eyes. And I'm like, God's eyes? They're beautiful people in anybody's eyes.
That's right. God's not very
just look
discerning.
Around the room, Judas, you know? It was great though, man.
I mean, how much – I mean, I'm just curious. So you're talking about like – you're talking about a lot of dudes wearing like a lot of pastel green, orange, and like red pants with like their sort of their slim fit shirts all tucked in with their
– Yeah, it was some of that big R, but then it was, you know, kind of your classic Southern affluent dude who still rocks like the super high-end like chinos, the blue blazer with the pastel shirt under it.
And like a bow tie and like an Al Mohler bow tie to go
with the bow tie, kind of the chinless affluence, you know, the comb over, you know, sort of swoopy hairdo, the sort of like.
He basically looks like a Southern version of Ken from Ken and Barbie.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like they are a bunch of Ken dolls. It's true. And yeah, the blazers, the crease chinos.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the big R, the slim fit, like pastel pants too. We did see some of that.
Yeah, those were the people that would have been at their hipster churches, but they were there with their like in-laws. They had to be
exactly. Yeah,
they had to be at the Brentwood mega church.
Rolling their eyes and going, "Where are all the beards?" You know,
exactly. They're saying if we could just get up to Ohio, we could get free beard oil and Anthro gift certificates right now.
Exactly. Yeah, I could win a pair of Red Wing boots at Big R's.
Exactly.
They missed the helicopter.
Well, that's what we dropped from our helicopter drop was Red Wings.
Red Wings had a couple of concussions.
Couple of concussions, and we don't have any money left in our budget now. But, I think it was worth it.
I didn't mention this. After our Red Wing boots conversation a few weeks ago, we had a listener hit us up on Twitter who said he's not a hipster, does wear construction boots because he actually works in construction. So good to know we have some real blue-blooded Americans who listen to this thing. He said Red Wings are not, in fact, the best construction boots out there, and I was misguided.
Really?
So
What did he say, man? What are the best ones?
You know, I didn't ask. I mainly just I felt so thoroughly chastised. I didn't want to ask.
Piper, it's okay. How could you know? How could you possibly know that?
Yeah, I talk on a microphone for free, so I leave the boot expertise to the people who wear boots for a living.
I mean, did he want us to go on Wikipedia and sort of do some research on that
He was very nice about it. He was not snarky. He was just saying he prefers other boots and Red Wings were not, in fact, the best. So
I respect that.
Yes, mea culpa.
Well, boys, we are going to transition out of this Easter topic and into something that we haven't done here on the program for a while. And that is a little segment that I like to call Drisky Business. Our boy Drisky is in the news again because at one of his conferences, John MacArthur intimated in a videotaped interview with Al Mohler, in which Mohler was looking every bit the part of the Southern gentleman, as he always does. But he basically said to Mohler had asked him about politics, and MacArthur said that Drisky, with all his kind of loud brashness and vulgarity, has really paved the way for Donald Trump. So all the Trump-related madness that's happening in this country now, we can pretty much blame it on Drisky, as said John MacArthur. So what do you boys make of this?
I think we should just let those comments sit for a second because they're so priceless.
They really are, man.
John MacArthur will not let this go. He will not let it go.
Talk about kicking a guy when he's down. You know,
can you for a minute just recap MacArthur's beef with Drisk? I know that those guys go way back in their dislike for one another. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Well, as far as I can tell, John MacArthur has a dislike for he is predisposed to dislike a lot of things.
Yeah,
but he really, really has taken exception over the years to Driscoll and then Driscoll's followers for profanity or vulgarity, kind of, you know, the way that he's talked about sex, the language that he's used, the way that he has a lot of it was his encouragement of people and how they engaged culture. You know, Driscoll would talk about MMA and Ultimate Fighting and then alcohol use. And so like anything that could rub a fundamentalist the wrong direction, like, or a legalist, I should say, the wrong direction, became a sticking point. And it became just this thing where like, even though they functionally agreed on the essentials, everything else was so contentious, they were just at each other's throats. And then it became a shtick thing, you know, when Driscoll started showing up and selling his books at John MacArthur's conferences, like out of his trunk, like bootlegging,
dude, yeah, like in the
bootlegging
parking
books,
lot.
Yeah, out of like an In-N-Out Burger across the street or a Del Taco.
That was kind
something.
Of the tipping point in that whole gig right there.
Well, that was like, yeah, that well, that was the nail in the coffin, because prior to that, they had actually tried to sort of make up at one point, but that never stuck. What I find really amusing about this, or maybe amusing is not the right word, maybe ironic, is that MacArthur and all of his sort of in-your-face hardline, this is the way to live the Christian life, paved the way for Driscoll in a lot of ways. So if Driscoll paved the way for Trump, which I don't think he did, but if Driscoll paved the way for Trump and MacArthur paved the way for Driscoll, didn't MacArthur pave the way for Trump?
Ooh, there it is. Boom. Boys, I just want to know, how long is it going to be until we show up in kind of a similar punk rock fashion and broadcast from the parking lot of one of these MacArthur comps, man?
At the Shepherd's Conference? We missed our opportunity because it happened last, I think, last month or this
month. Baby, he probably has another conf or two along the way, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he does two conferences a week.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So let's just hit the next one.
The only downside is how far away it is. They're always in Southern California. Which is
that's true. We need somebody to underwrite that, man.
Yeah, that's a long drive. I wonder if we get like Southwest Airlines as a sponsor or something.
Oh, absolutely. LAX and then straight up to Santa Clarita, boys. It's not an issue.
Any further traction on our little Happy Rant confab idea, man?
We heard from probably, you know, when we put it out there, whatever it was, 2-3 weeks ago, we had several people who responded positively and said they'd like to come. And we've had at least that many or more come back and say they would as well. We've gotten votes for Cincinnati, Nashville, Atlanta, and Louisville. Those are the places that people have put forward and said you should come and do it here. So all of which are actually pretty manageable distances from us for the most part. So there's the potential there. And then we've had a couple people say, why don't you do it while you're at a conference? And that way they can kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, let me put this out here. If we do it in Louisville, I will dress like Al Mohler for the duration of the event. Bow tie, blue blazer, lapel pin, slacks.
And I probably won't dress like Al Mohler for the duration.
Dude, I would be so excited to be there.
Okay, this is what I'm going to throw out there because we have a Sojourn conference in Louisville in November. So maybe we need to start putting it out there to our listeners that maybe there'll be the possibility of us putting together something around that time in conjunction with the Sojourn conference, which would maybe kill, you know, numerous birds with one stone. And maybe that gives us enough time to plan for it and sort of get some people involved in it that could help.
Maybe we could pull you away from your quinoa and bourbon tasting for a couple hours. And
I'm sure I could figure that out.
If somebody will promise to give me a pair of Red Wing boots, I'll make it up to Louisville in November.
Dude, we got to get Red Wing seriously to just underwrite this thing, man.
So what Barnabas means by that, guys, is that we each need $350 each to be able to put this together and actually do the work of the
baby. I'm not going to rest until I'm in Louisville wearing a bow tie, wearing my Red Wings that have come courtesy of the Red Wing Boots Company.
I'm pretty sure Al Mohler's a penny loafer guy.
Yeah, I think you're right. And guys, can we just cap the Driskey thing really quick?
Sure.
By saying that to say that Driskey is responsible for evangelicals voting for Trump is giving him far too much influence. Do we all agree on that? I mean, this is a guy that had a pretty wide range of influence, but brother, he didn't have that kind of.
I would venture to guess that 99% of the people who are supporting Donald Trump have never heard of Mark Driscoll.
And I would venture to say that I would say that 99% of Driscoll's previous fan base would not be people supporting Donald Trump. I would go that far as well.
I think what John MacArthur sees is two people who he views as crass loudmouths and just sort of assumes that they're cousins.
Right.
I mean, that's at least ideological cousins. Which is also unfair to Driscoll because for all of his faults, like Donald Trump is a bad human being at every level.
Yes.
He is a hateful human being. Mark Driscoll made a lot of mistakes and, you know, has done some really dumb stuff. Some of it has been very hurtful. He is not Donald Trump. He is not even close to Donald Trump. I just saw today that Donald Trump has proposed that women who get abortions should be punished. That's his idea of pro-life. Hmm. Like, he's just like quadrupling down on the stupid at this point. And so it's not only giving Driscoll way too much credit for his influence, it's a pretty harsh insult to somebody who is nowhere near the class of bad that Donald Trump is.
Well, let me just ask this too, because when I heard him say it, you know what it sounded to me like? It sounded really uninformed. It sounded kind of like when you're talking to like a grandparent about something that has just like seen like a news clip on something and then tries to like talk and pontificate on it as if they've done all this research on it. With all due respect to Johnny Mac, that's like how that sounded. It just sounded so reactionary and so grandfatherly without really any like sort of work or thought having like taken place behind it. Did it sound like that to you?
I think that's a pretty fair analysis. Yeah, it's like when a grandparent sees the 60 Minutes story about somebody posting on Facebook that they're out of town and then their house gets robbed, and then they forever view Facebook as the site that gets people's house robbed. That's kind of what this is.
Guys, not to get too political here, but have you actually run into anybody, like any evangelicals who are actually claiming to support Trump? Because I haven't. And again, West Tennessee is not, you know, this is not Manhattan. These are not sort of elite cultural circles that we're running in. But yeah, I've yet to actually run into someone who has like the courage to claim Trump publicly.
Yeah, I have. I've ran into a few people actually. Yeah, and okay. people that are probably a little too close to me, and I got to sort of leave it at that. But you know, of course, in my position,
in-laws was a little tough, huh?
It was a little tough. I mean, especially given that they're 3,000 miles away. So yeah, I had to. We Skyped that one in, and that's where it all happened. And so we're still reeling from the shock of it all. Yeah.
I haven't run across anybody who claims it. Now, I'm certain I've run across people who are lying about it, but yeah, nobody who I've talked to about it is saying that they will. What I have heard from a bunch of people is if it comes down to Trump versus whoever, they would pick him over the alternative. And I'm like, those are not your only options. You can pick a third way here, but
– and you know what? And Piper, that's interesting because I think that's – and again, not to get so – we keep saying not to get so political. Let's just get political.
Yep, we're being political.
I think that's the one I keep running into, which is when people say, no, I'm not a fan, but if it comes down to him or her, it's going to be him. That's where I still really struggle. Big T?
Boy, speaking of people who are – funny and ridiculous. Let's move to our third topic.
we're getting unpolitical real fast.
We're going to get unpolitical real fast. This is a listener suggestion, and it's as follows. Regarding Christian comedians, their question was, can somebody actually be a Christian and be actually funny? Is Christian comedian like a category that can even exist?
That's actually a great question.
It is a great question, and I tell you, I don't know that I've ever seen a Christian comedian like in person. I'm not familiar with this phenomenon. Although I will say, back up north, man, in the kind of evangelical community, we lived in the East Lansing area, and there was this comedian, and Barnabas, helped me out with the name. It was the guy that does the like Hot Pockets bit, man.
Oh, Jim
Gaffigan. Yep. Yeah.
Dude, so whenever Gaffigan would come to town, it was really strange because I don't know that he's a Christian. I don't know that he's ever like self-identified as a Christian, but
he's Catholic. That dude, yeah, he's Catholic, and he's pretty open about being raised Irish Catholic and still being pretty. I don't know if he's devout, but he still identifies that way.
His wife is a devout Catholic, and he kind of goes along with the ride.
So that dude would come to town, man, and like seriously, all the evangelicals would like buy out the place. And it was like if you were, you know, a member of this church and you weren't going to Gaffigan, man, you were lonely. It was a lonely night. So I've actually I've been to see Jim Gaffigan a couple of times, and it's interesting that Christians claim him, in much the same way that we tried to claim like I don't know, Bob Dylan and Bono and a bunch of other people that we thought were cool along the way.
Yeah, and that's because, I mean, yeah, Christians have claimed two sort of general, you know, I would say, you know, mainstream general market comedians. The first is Gaffigan. The second is a guy named Brian Regan. And it's just simply because these guys
Regan was the guy. So, man, sorry.
Yeah, and so these guys have just – they've built platforms by being, 98%, clean-mouthed. And really just talking about things that really relate to, on a family level, they can relate to a lot of Christian families on that level. You know, Gaffigan's big thing is food. And I don't know what Regan's big platform is. He's just a generally funny guy. I think Gaffigan is legitimately like a really talented, funny comedian. I mean, it's a taste thing. I get it. But in terms of like pure Christian comedy, so back in the 70s and the 80s, there was a Christian comedy troupe. I don't know if you guys even remember this group called Isaac Airfreight. And they they'd kind of done the circuit. And they were kind of coming out of this whole Calvary Chapel movement where, you know, they had a lot of these skits and these bits that were kind of hitting off of the rapture and the end times. And they kind of made a big splash.
Sounds like a hoot.
Yeah, it was actually there was parts of it that were, you know, funny for the day and for the era. They were talented guys. I mean, since then, I know there's been a lot of like, you know, solo comedians that have kind of risen up and kind of faded into obscurity. And I think a lot of it is that, I think the industry just lacks some legitimate talent. And I think, again, when there's a part of you that has to just really trade out some of the edginess, which is what makes – you know, comedy funny in some ways, I think it makes it really hard. I mean, I always compare it with Christian hip hop. You know, at some point, I mean, you know, we can say a lot of great things about guys like Lecrae and stuff, but I think in terms of the kind of the kind of language and the kind of, you know,
there's the sense that rap has to be a little bit dangerous.
Man. It has to be a little bit dangerous.
You know? And I think comedy's the same way. It's got to be a little bit aggressive.
Comedy thrives on the awkward. It thrives on making you laugh at things that you wouldn't otherwise laugh at because you either didn't notice them. And Christian comedians could do that, you know, just good observational comedy, although you run out of material if you're trying to stay in the realm of, you know, the church world.
Which I think is a mistake. That's the mistake, is to try to keep it in there. And I think when guys sort of rise up to become kind of the voice of Christian comedy, I think that's where they run out of material and it's just not as compelling. Because why not just listen to a guy like Gaffigan that can be a little edgier and stay funny?
When a Christian comedian can't – like if you bring a Christian comedian to, say, a marriage conference and they're going to be – you know, they're going to do a sort of an evening thing, like they can't talk about sex because that's too edgy. But like that's the stuff that makes – like that's where comedy thrives, is going into the awkward. And somebody like Gaffigan can do it well because he can get into the awkward. Now, he also is just sort of a – he's almost an outlier here because he can talk about Hot Pockets and make people laugh. And that's kind of like Seinfeld could talk about Pop-Tarts. You know, he had this
Pop-Tarts
similar.
Bit. It's really similar.
And but yeah, I think the other thing is you have to be willing to offend people. And if you are the more public you are as a Christian, the less you try to offend people, unless, of course, you're John MacArthur or Mark Driscoll, in which case you thrive on offending people. But And that's not something that they're willing to do. So they play it in the safe little sandboxes, and that gets really boring really fast. There's very few, like, you can't do a Christian comedy bit and have people keep coming back for more unless you're willing to become somebody who they call cynical, they call too sarcastic, they call too edgy, and that's where it just doesn't tend to thrive, I don't think.
Oh, I think you're totally on point with that because, yeah, what happens as soon as you offend somebody like in your church? Well, they leave. And so I think, yeah, you run the risk of like losing your entire fan base if it crosses a line that everybody deems unacceptable, for sure.
Boys, you remember what I remember about growing up in the 80s, man, very vividly. I remember gathering with the fam, flipping on NBC on a Thursday night. And everybody on the couch watching The Cosby Show. Did you guys have this experience growing up?
Are we allowed to talk about The Cosbys, or are we supposed to pretend like that didn't exist at this point?
Well, dude, I just feel like we need to get back to a time where we're really embracing a clean, wholesome comedian who really just embodies family values, man. Why can't we get back to that? Oh, you know?
I feel like I need to go take a shower.
That's my question. Remember how good we all felt about Cosby back then? We all felt like we were like civil rights activists. You know, the Lily White family sitting down to watch, you know, Bill Cosby.
Well, and yeah, not only Race that, but the whole premise of the show was like strong marriage, good parents, work through all their troubles, that kind of Absolutely. Stuff, you know, strong family values. And yeah, that all seems sadly ironic now. No.
Vanessa Huxtable was my first celebrity crush, man. And she wasn't even the like purportedly hot one. You know what I mean?
Big T, you're the most diverse person I've ever met in my life.
No, oh, baby, you know.
you should get out of Ohio.
Says the man from Ashland, Ohio.
That's right.
There you go.
Well, gentlemen, we have done what we always do on this program, which is wander to and fro. And I would be remiss this time, especially given some of my mess ups in the middle of the program, if I didn't thank the boys at Resonate Recordings, who they take those things out, they make us sound good, they fix it when we have in studio interruptions, and we appreciate all the hard work that they do. So check them out. The boys at Resonate Recordings. And guys, we've wandered to and fro. It's been fun. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for working everything out for my good. Help me trust in your perfect plan. Amen.
Father, thank you for loving and caring for me.
With Christian prayer meditation, you can pray along to prayers based on specific topics. Go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Christian prayer meditation. You can also download the Abide app for biblical meditations at abide.com.